Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture and to encourage viewers to recognize that entertainment is not mindless. But you're ready?
Yes.
You're
yes.
ready? You're ready. And I'm very proud of your notes, Alan.
Thank you.
All right. So, if everyone is ready, welcome to Real World Theology, Episode 9. I'm your host, Fizz. On this episode of the show, we expand our reviewing prowess to a different medium, television. And of course, we do not sneak to the edge of the water and dip our toe into a new medium. We dive headfirst by taking on The Walking Dead, a show that is about a sheriff, Rick Grimes, who leads a band of survivors in a world overrun by zombies. Survival, worldviews, trust, existentialism, postmodernism, and, well, what makes us human, all are on the table with this show. Joining me this episode is roughly 50% of our Walking Dead viewing group. Putting names to the voices that you probably already heard, we have some familiar faces. Alan Hawkins, lead pastor at Church of the Redeemer in Greensboro.
What up?
We also have back for a second show, Jack of all trades, Chris, I'll hook you up with a free water, Merriweather.
It's nice to be here.
And last but certainly not least is probably the smartest man in the room, who I just made nervous by saying that, licensed professional counselor, Harold Petrini.
Howdy.
That was awesome. These guys are part of that collection of folks who gather on Sunday nights to see what this show will surprise us or disappoint us with next. So, welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Amen.
Thanks.
So, to start off, we have to acknowledge how big a show this really is. It's one thing that's going to be hard to do is there's already three seasons of the show out there. I don't expect to like cover every story arc in the limited time that we're going to have today. So we're going to kind of give like an overview of kind of like things that have generally happened, the direction the show goes and the questions that the show generally brings up. Now we could hit specific storylines if they work, but anyone who's looking for like a specific season two or season three review, probably not this episode. We might do one next year, right before when we review season four and the specific stuff. But this one is a little more general. But the third season, which came out last year, the premiere of that Walking Dead season became the most watched basic cable drama telecast in history. The mid-season finale pulled in 15.2 million viewers and became the first cable series to beat every other show of the fall broadcast season in the adult 18 to 49 demo, that very, very sought after, you know, the people that basically watch TV the most, males 18 to 49. So I guess that the best way to simply start off, after acknowledging how big of a show is, to just ask, what do you guys like about the show? Why do you watch it? And I guess more importantly to this specific show, why do you think everyone else watches it? So, Alan, why do you watch the show?
Well, probably my favorite genre is apocalyptic. So it's a great story of humanity at its edge. And in some ways, the zombies are superfluous to the story. They're just the agency that's going to destroy humanity. And so I love that kind of what are we going to do in light of these things? And I think it's also pretty interesting, the whole cultural phenomenon that's becoming attracted to both vampires and zombies. So you have the Twilight series and shows like that. But also on the flip side, you have zombies. And culturally, I think they represent humanity without a soul and kind of two options. So it's fun to watch it and see what's going to happen to humanity when it's pressed with its own self-survival. And that's just a great dynamic to watch.
So you think culturally people are predisposed to see where what humanity would do at the edge of itself?
Yeah, I think apocalyptic genre really appeal to especially men, so the popular group that you're talking, you can think of old movies, Mad Max, Beyond mm-hmm. Thunderdome, Star Trek a few years ago, one of the stories was about the Earth about to get killed and Khan and mm-hmm. all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so there's just this sense of our own mortality when we're faced with its extinction. And that's why this is probably such an attractive genre, too. So.
I think you like it because Michonne.
I love Michonne.
Just going to call you out.
I hope my wife doesn't hear this. I have a secret fetish for Michonne. So we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
All right. Well, Chris, since you spoke up, you get to go. What is it? What is it keeps you coming back every week?
Well, I first came to The Walking Dead through the comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my favorite. I'm a comic book geek at heart, and I love the comic book. I am that guy. Really, when the show came out, incredibly excited about it. And, you know, from the get-go, that's really what got me hooked. And then, you know, getting together with you guys and kind of just the week-to-week drama, and it's, you know, it's just a good time.
So what do you have like a different perspective maybe on why you think it's kind of catching on like so big? You know, it's not just like, oh, this is another good show that you and some of your friends who read comic books are watching. I mean, this is 15.2. Yeah. What do you think that this show is doing or has that
Yeah.
Two men and a stupid plot line don't have.
Or right, yeah. I would say, you know, kind of like, I'm not totally sure, but there is something to, like Alan mentioned, something to survival scenarios, reducing us to the base of who we are, and it's a drama at its core, and, you know, it's got action and zombies and all the good ingredients for A-plus entertainment. It ranges from A plus to, you know, C minus, but
F minus,
yeah. But you know, it has all the ingredients. So, you know, every week you want to tune in and see what happens. So, yeah,
cool.
That's what I think people watch.
So, last but like I said, not least, Harold, what brings you back?
Well, what I love about this show is that to me, it's a picture of human nature in the raw, and it really shows opportunities or crisis points or tipping points, you know, so often. And during those crisis moments, people can either be at their best or at their worst or both. And it's really interesting for me to watch who's going to choose to do what and why and how it affects everybody else. Just the struggle for survival, you know, how when society is reduced to nothing, you know, and it has to rebuild itself, how it does that step by step, that's really interesting to me. Plus, I love the fellowship and just getting together on Sunday nights. I look forward to that every week. So
it's good.
I love to turn to Harold and say, as a professional counselor, what's that guy's problem? Oh, he's got PTSD. Oh, okay, well.
Well, and that leads us to one of, I think, the most compelling things about the show, and that's the characters themselves. Now, depending on where you land, I know personally I was really high on the show at the beginning, and season two kind of took a big dip for me, I think, in most viewers. Season three had its kind of roller coaster moments, some really good stuff, some really kind of flat valley parts. But ultimately, we have characters that we see ourselves in, we see others in, we hope we never become. We realize that we probably are, whether we want to be or not. So just acknowledging that fact that every one of these characters has been on a journey. Some have already met their journey's end. And just in case people don't know this because you haven't listened to an episode of the show before, spoilers. We're going to talk about, like I said, seasons 1, 2, and 3. We're going to try to rein Chris in so he doesn't give us too much away from the comics.
Big stuff.
But all the way through season 3 is fair game, and so if you didn't know that out there in listener land, we are going to talk about the demise of some characters and things like that. But these characters that are on these journeys, like, I really follow them. I'm really like, oh my gosh, where are they going next? And I love the fact that almost every single character is good and bad. Mm-hmm. You know, we never see that storyline where, oh, this is the hero. He's obviously the hero. Mm-hmm. He never does anything wrong. He's always making the decision that I would make. Mm-hmm. Because I think much like all three of you guys mentioned, we see people push to the end of their own humanity, much less humanity's existence itself, and we see what people would do to survive. Mm-hmm. And we can get into why they would survive later. But like I said, looking specifically at the characters, I guess my second question to you guys, since we're watching this show every week, obviously there's things we resonate with outside of just concept. There's got to be characters that we see ourselves in or we see parts of humanity in. So what character is it that you resonate most with? Who do you see yourself in? And I would say, what character do you think you'd, not necessarily your favorite character, but like which one resonates with you most? And then which one do you think you'd be? Because I think sometimes the one that kind of clicks with us the most, we know, you know, that's who we'd like to be, but it's not always who we are. Mm-hmm. So I guess I throw that out there to you, and we can go in reverse order this time. Harold making the surprise face. Okay, so Harold, what character do you resonate most with? Like, who makes, I guess, the most sense to you? And then at the end of the day, who do you think on this show, out of its large cast of characters, do you think you would wind up being?
Well, I think Herschel resonates the most with me. I know that's kind of an unusual choice, but to me, you know, he loves his family, mm-hmm. and I think his need to survive, you know, is so much a function of his love for his daughters, you know, and just to want to make sure that they're okay at the end of the day, you know. When he lost half his leg, you know, and he survived, he could have easily given up, you know, and he chose not to. And, of course, somebody else chopped the other half of his leg off so that he could survive, but still, you know, I've always liked, he's simple, you know, he's simple-minded, he's straightforward. I think he has a great deal of compassion for others, but has good, you know, good boundaries, or at least has had in the past. Who knows what the future will look like? But so yeah, I really like him a lot, and I think for now I'm gonna pass on the other one. I'm gonna have to think about part B of your question as to
who you think you would end up.
Yeah, because I don't know.
Well, I guess if Herschel's the one that resonates with you most, what is it about how he interacts in a post-apocalyptic world? Is it the fact that, like, he's got his priorities in a particular order that you hope that you would have yours in?
Yeah, I think so. I think I would want to say that I would have, you know, always keep my family in mind, you know, and I would always want the best for them, and yeah, and I would want to be with them. You know, I would not want to leave them behind or be left behind by them. So I would try to do whatever I could to keep up. You know, even, you know, as I'm the oldest one in the room by far, even with, you know, younger people in the younger generation, just, you know, the energy that he has, you mm-hmm. know, just keeping up, even with, without a leg, you know.
I would chop off your leg.
Thanks, Chris.
If you would save your life.
Yeah.
We're also saying that not only would you like to keep your family close, you'd like to keep them so close that even if they got bit, you'd keep them in the barn.
Well, okay. Now, like, there's three. There's that part. But you know what? You know what? Yeah. You know, even so, I mean, that's. In a way, you know, that's compassion, you know. It's compassion beyond the obvious fact that there's no solution, you know. But he wasn't driven by evil, you know, when he did that. He really thought that his family and friends could somehow be turned back someday. And he didn't want to kill them, you know. So I'd like to think that I would react that way. And, you know, that's what I would want to do.
Chris?
Yes. What character resonates with me the most?
Yeah.
I would say probably Rick, in the sense of you see him start out as this, you know, sterling character, you know, very clear right from wrong, you know. And you just see him make sacrifices as he's faced with difficult decisions and, you know, making calls that he at one time never would have imagined he would make. And you just see that repeatedly over and over and over again. And I just think that that's, you know, he's really represents humanity in, you know, all of its flaws and all of it, a lot of its, you know, positive traits as well. But that I would say that's who I resonate with the most. That's not who I think I would be by any means, but I think, you know, I feel that same sort of character traits, you know, I think resonates with me and mm-hmm. all of us in major ways. I think that's, you know, he's supposed to resonate with us in mm-hmm. a lot of ways. Who I think I would be, I think I would probably be a zombie, you know, I mean, for being real.
Because we had this conversation earlier.
Chances are.
Where you thought you were ready for the zombie apocalypse?
Yeah, I would totally be a zombie. These are walking zombies, so they might be a little more manageable. But
and you have read World War Z now, so you're a lot more prepared.
Right. Yeah, running zombies, I'm out. But walking zombies, if a character, I would probably be like a Lori. Somebody that people would want to kill and want to die. Or like, you know, I don't see myself handling the situation very well, honestly.
Not very good at driving on barren roads.
Right. You know.
Never being able to find your child.
Yeah, I don't think people would like me in their zombie team. Who I hope I would be like a Daryl or a Michonne. You know, even the governor, in some sense, in the fact of like, no mercy, like, you're dead. Boom, you're out. So kind of the survival instincts need to be up there in my book, you know. You're stupid, you're making bad choices, boom, you're gone.
That's, now across the board, like even if your wife is...
We've talked a lot about it.
And, that's how you know your marriage is strong.
I'm sorry, Jesse, but you're... I know you would want me to just ditch you. Yeah. You know, and vice versa. Of course, because I love her.
I would ditch you because I love you.
Right, yes.
Was that? I think that was in your vows, actually.
It might have been in the subclause. Yeah.
Harold, I can't wait to talk to you after this is over about Chris.
Oh, good. That's good. Yeah, diagnose me. Yeah,
it's not good.
We'll make an appointment.
Okay.
But I guess conceptually, you're saying that even though Rick, the everyman, is who you can kind of follow along with in the journey,
mm-hmm.
you think if things hit the fan,
yeah.
you would be survivalist.
That's what I hope ruthless. I would be. And ruthless maybe has a different coloring of what I'm saying. Not ruthless for ruthlessness sake. Wise. But more for the sake of...
Cold. He's just cold.
More for the sake of furthering humanity. Things such as that, you know.
How are you going to further humanity when you left your wife behind?
Because she's going to die anyway. I mean, we, you know, you don't need to get into that, but...
I don't know. She's pretty... I think she might be able to run further than you can. You get a bum knee.
Yeah, I don't know. So I think that there are values to surviving.
Mm-hmm.
And so... Not being hateful for, you know, hateful sake, but surviving, I think, would be a pretty important, you know, part of this
I'm with you.
Plan.
I just want to make sure you'd fully thought out.
Oh, it's thought
before,
out.
Before Harold got a hold of you.
It's thought out. Now, see, for example, I would chop off his leg, and if that was unsuccessful, then I would chop off his head. But it would still be living. In that order, not head first. You know what I mean?
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah. So that clarifies.
That's love.
Yes, that is. That's
tough love.
That's what we're
tough
here
love.
For.
Ah, okay, Alan. Really tough.
Yeah. Okay, so definitely Michonne resonates with me.
Okay.
I love her.
The dreads.
I love the two zombies chained up. And that was brilliant. And I think those were her brothers, right?
Well, I think...
Some sort of
family. We were hinted family. At that they might have been some family kind of family.
Yeah.
So, she represents for me humanity when it finds itself at its edge, how its instincts kick in to survive. So, for instance, she's fiercely loyal to other humans. So she was always trying to help Andrea, and really committed to her almost like a sister.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's pretty remarkable, because as Chris over here, dog eat dog man, was saying, you know, it's every man for himself, where she doesn't appear to be that way. Secondly, she's very discerning. So she has a pretty low view of humanity, even though she has a high loyalty to humanity. So she sniffed out the governor from day one. You know, she knew this isn't Shangri-La. There's something behind all this. And she wasn't going to quit until she found the answer. And so I love that character. You know, it's like every week I want to hear more about Michonne than anybody else. So that resonates with me. Who I think I would be is probably Rick. So Rick has a high sense of responsibility. That would kick in for me. Like, I've got to protect and lead and take this group. And so I love that about him as well. He, in the midst of all his vacillations of highs and lows, he still remains resolutely committed to leading and caring for the community, which I think is pretty big. That connects with me. Yeah, I would probably step into that way. Now, I do want to talk about who won me over. So if I had to shed a tear for somebody, it was Merle, Daryl's brother.
Yeah.
You know, just this absolute scumbag, self-interested, narcissist, just user of people probably, and just an angry man who ends up laying his life down at the end to protect his brother and his brother's community. And that was just this picture of redemption for me. That I saw in Merle, that he went from being this just awful character that we wished he would have died on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And we were disappointed that he got out of that and, you know, chewed his hand off or whatever he did. To here's a person who, at the end, I almost wish he wouldn't have gone.
Mm.
I wish he would have continued on to see him fully realize that redemption. So that's the characters that I've really connected with the most, those three.
Well, and I like that, because you did hit on the fact that, like, almost every one of these people have an arc.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every one of them's on a journey to some degree. Let's see. Personally, I want to say that I kind of also can see where Rick is the everyman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I resonate with what he's trying to do. As someone who I naturally step into, like, leadership positions if no one steps up.
Mm-hmm.
I have typically a high responsibility kind of engine, mm-hmm. you know, like you're talking about, Alan. And I will put myself in that situation, often to my own detriment.
Mm-hmm.
And I will often, one thing, I guess the best way I can describe it is, in the first season, Rick, having overcome like nearly every odd to finally be reunited with his family, says, I left a man behind. It's my responsibility
mm-hmm.
to go back, even though he's kind of a dirtbag.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I know I'm going to be letting other people down, I have like, I like him at the especially I resonate with him at the beginning, because he has some kind of higher moral code.
Yeah.
And while people's moral codes kind of seem to wax and wane whenever it's convenient, I find that his was most resolute through at least the first season.
Mm-hmm.
It's once we get into some of the seasons where they, I think, try to poorly develop his character or make jumps that they don't earn. We see his kind of moral code flip mm-hmm. for no reason, and I lose him a little bit. So anytime you have a character like that, I naturally resonate with him. But who I think I would actually be is, I really think I would be Dale. Except I would still be alive, because falling down wouldn't, I don't understand how he died. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
Poor Dale.
But what Dale is doing is, he is trying to be like the ultimate compromiser.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's trying to care for the people in his community. Right. He's not only trying to care for them, like, physically, but he's trying to care for, like, their souls. Mm-hmm. In the best way he can, without being like a, you know, like a Herschel, like, God has ordained this and stuff like that. He's just trying to meet them where they are. He always keeps trying to help Andrea out, or Andrea, depends on, I guess, who's talking to her. You know, he's always trying to help her out in a very fatherly kind of, you know, he's looking after Carl when no one else can find Carl.
Yeah, where's Carl?
He's always giving advice. You know, and yet at the same time, he understands the need to protect people and responsibility. Yet he's willing to maybe not be the first person to say, well, yeah, we should put a bullet in their head.
Well, I think he definitely has the prophetic edge. So he would call out the right and the wrongness of people's hearts and motivations.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
I see that with you as well. You know, just even the whole guy that they brought in from that town,
mm-hmm.
he was arguing to preserve his life. And, you know, they were doing the Chris Merriweather on him. There,
Whoa, now.
No mercy, you know.
Sure, well, now.
He's an outsider and can't be trusted. So yeah. You just eliminate him or leave him for dead. And so I see you doing that a lot.
Well, I mean, side. And I took a little quiz they came out with, like, somewhere in season two, and I got Dale.
That's
so
good.
I know.
Way to go.
I know.
Those things are 100% accurate.
100%, well, it's like 10 questions.
Yeah.
What can be more thorough than 10
right.
questions?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, like I said, the thing that, like I said, would make me more like Dale instead of Rick is because, like I said, Rick, I find, is like the wind with his compass. His goal is always the same, to survive and to keep other people alive. Mm-hmm. But his compass in doing so is really depending on what stage they're at, who they're interacting with. But Dale was like, I felt he was very constant up until he had his untimely, unglorious, too soon demise.
Undoing.
Yeah, like, and like I said, and it was one of my, I felt like he deserved a better death because, you know, like, oh God, I fell down and what?
Would you say that about T-Dog?
T-Dog? I do think T-Dog deserved a better death.
And I noticed in your description of Merle, you know, T-Dog gave himself for the group and you didn't mention T-Dog.
Yeah, he didn't have such a swing.
Yeah,
that's true.
T-Dog didn't have a reason.
That's true.
So, you know, so one thing that I know you've said when we've watched it is your critique of Rick. I actually, watching Rick, really connected with the fact that he's the leader of the group, clearly. And he is vacillating between two opinions of power and democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And so his kind of waywardness and inconsistency, I actually liked, because I think that can be what we're faced with when we have to know, how much power do I keep? How much power do I share? You know, what's my agenda versus the group's agenda? And I love the whole, you know, that one scene where he's like, all right, no more voting, or, you know, it's all me.
Yeah.
And that's him trying to say, I can't lead with all these opinions. And so I'm going to take the reins. And then what happens the next season is he gives those reins back.
Mm.
So I think his character development is actually really robust because of that. Mm. So I'm not down on Rick.
Well, like I said, I love the fact that hypothetically he should be going to these places. I don't necessarily know if the storytelling gets us in those places. And like I said, that's more of a cinematic critique than like an actual...
Right.
You know, character critique. But so we have all these characters, and each one of them, obviously, we all have different answers of who we resonate with, and there is only four of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so obviously all these characters have some type of worldview. They have some type of way they see the world, that they interact with people, that they, when faced with the end of humanity or the possible end of humanity, react. So I just kind of wanted to go sort of down the list,
mm-hmm.
and we've already hit on Rick, so we'll start with him. But, like, you know, we have Rick, the reluctant leader, who becomes the, well, everyone needs to survive and no one's listening. So, and this is kind of where I hope Harold would help us a little bit.
Come on,
I mean,
Harold.
And, you know, and not a lot of pressure, but, like, in general, like, when we've already talked about Rick having like this kind of moral compass that waxes and wanes. Like, do we think that Rick, like, would you follow Rick? I guess that's the best question to ask.
In a post-apocalyptic world, I would say, yeah. You take what you can get.
Well, how long can you follow somebody? Because, you know, we see these scenes in season two where he goes into a church and kind of has like a come to Jesus moment, mm-hmm. and then doesn't really come to Jesus.
Yeah. But who wouldn't be having come to Jesus moments in a zombie apocalypse? You know, I mean, if he's not like struggling in major ways, now granted, some are more of a struggle than other. Then you know something's probably wrong with them. Then you have the governor who's like, it would seem like completely unfazed by much of anything, and that's psychotic.
So we think the best part about Rick is his humanity.
I think it's his humanity, but I think the best part about Rick is his willingness to engage others as a team. So he is committed to the idea of them as a group, as a family, which means he does, you know, you see him interacting a lot with Herschel and Dale. So he's trying to do the right thing by listening to others. That's why I'd follow him. You know, personally, whereas like Shane is, who's his good friend, is quite the opposite. Shane is completely absorbed in self-interest, and so his leadership will abuse people, as we saw. And he had to go. Thank goodness.
Yeah, so. I think Rick is, you know, with everything, pretty transparent and honest through his process. And I think he struggles with a balance between justice and mercy. Maybe it's a different way of saying what you're saying. Mm. And or maybe not struggles, you know, but I think it's a good tension to have between justice and mercy. And when is one appropriate and when is the other one appropriate? And the truth is both are appropriate at different times. And I think he's been quite successful in leading the group using both of those ends at different times, depending on what the group needed and depending on what he could give, you know. Now I'm a little worried about him because he's had a psychotic break. You know, but
just because he sees dead people? Or he's getting phone calls from dead people?
All of the above. But, you know, that goes to show, you know, that he does not by himself have the strength to do this. You know, he needs other people. He needs the group. He needs the community to survive, you know, to move forward. And like Alan was saying, to make decisions, you know, that are good for everybody, for the greater good, you know, because, he knows he's impaired to some degree. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty honest, too. And I wonder what part of him, you know, that is in touch with the reality that he's losing it, you know, is the one that's reaching out to other people. Mm. Saying, help me, because, you know, I don't know how much longer I can do this, you know, but... You
can't hold it all together.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think he's honest, and you know, I think he did his best. I think he's doing his best. Who knows what's going to happen, but he's giving it an honest try, right. You know, for the greater good, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, and Alan also mentioned Shane being almost like his foil. When I had to think of a way to describe Shane... I just wrote down Darwin's finest.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is a man who is, like, survival of the shaniest.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and they're both strong leaders. Mm-hmm. And so the competition, which, you know, it's amazing that there was the competition that resulted over Lori. But then there's this the competition that resulted in trying to take leadership of the group. And eventually, Rick prevails on both accounts. Lori goes back to Rick, and the group turns to Rick as their leader, not Shane. And I think that shows the people seeing the inward character of Rick versus the inward character of Shane.
Well, I guess what I'd ask is that I don't believe it would be taking too much liberty to say that as an audience, we are supposed to view Rick as a good guy, mm-hmm. and Shane as a bad guy. though Shane, if he were, I think if people put themselves in like Lori and or Rick's position, and Shane was going to get the medical equipment, maybe they wouldn't be so upset if it mm-hmm. saved their child that he maybe sacrificed some other member. And the fact that we see lots of people who have no real spiritual arrow or spiritual pointer, really not grasping on to this whole, you got to get what you can get while you can get it, and don't trust other people, just survive. But why are people not grasping onto that? Why are people grasping onto this guy who seems to have some kind of moral compass instead? Mm. You know, especially in a world, and not to get, I guess, too far ahead of ourselves, but in a world that would say truth is relative or morality is relative at best, why are we still holding on to someone who has morality when we're talking about survival, straight up survival?
Yeah, that's a great one, because I think that I would say theologically we're designed with someone who is our leader, someone who's our creator. So when we fall into a crisis, we need a shepherd. We need a leader. And Rick became that leader. He earned that. He earned it by sacrificing himself for his community. And so that's what made him noble. Whereas I don't think Shane, like the difference is Rick, what was the guy's name that Shane shot in the leg?
Otis. Yeah, don't forget.
Rick would not have shot Otis. Hmm. He would have done everything he could. He might have even let himself be taken over Otis. He would have done everything that he could in his power to come out of there alive with Otis. Hmm. Whereas Shane, rather than doing that, he knew, well, if I took this guy out who's meaningless to me, my real good friends and the woman I want to love me and her son will be saved. And that's the difference. I think that there's a quality of shepherding and leadership that Rick had over Shane. Both strong leaders, though.
And the people are naturally drawn to that, whether they know it or not.
Whether they know it or not. They want Rick to lead them.
I really think, you know, Shane lived for today because he never deep down knew whether there was going to be a tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So he wanted today to be as exciting and whatever, you know, yeah. as it could possibly be. So you know, he became unscrupulous. He lost his values. I don't think he was a bad guy to begin with. Mm-hmm. You know, he went through a decay, you know, through the storyline, and became more ruthless and more selfish and more self-centered. For, you know, just focusing on, actually very existential for that matter, you know, but the way that he resolved his existential issues was right here, right now, I'm getting everything I can mm-hmm. for me, you know, because at the end of the day, we're all alone, I'm alone, it's all about me. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's one of my favorite quotes from Abraham Maslow, and it's, under stress, we regress. And I think he's a perfect picture of that. You mm-hmm. know, when he was Rick's partner, he was a policeman, you know. You know, he had an affair with Lori, but he wasn't a bad person, you know. And then all this stuff happened to him, you know. And what that concept says is that, you know, we go back to that which is comfortable for us. Mm. We can act civilized, we can be, you know, polite, we can be professional, as long as everything's okay. We can treat others right, you know, but then when the crap hits the fan, you know, then we lose all of that and we go back to our survival mode. And, you know, we're all different as to mm-hmm. what that looks like. But for him, that was a very selfish place, you know, ultimately, versus for Rick, you know, that's a different place, you know. For Rick, it's a place that includes other people, that seems to care about other people, and again seems to care about the greater good somehow.
Mm-hmm. We have both of these guys on opposite end of the spectrum directly influencing another character, Carl.
Where's Carl?
The unfindable.
Where is he? He's a ninja.
The Carl the Unfindable. What? Swallow the coffee, Harold, and tell us what is going on with Carl.
Man, what would be going on with you if you saw your mother, if you had to shoot your mother in the head?
Oh, God.
What do you think? I mean,
he's a sociopath.
Disassociate
his feelings.
He went very flat. You know, actually, there's a new buzzword going around, which is called complex trauma. He would be the poster child for that, you know. Which is trauma after trauma after trauma, you know, because it's not just the death of Lori. It's, you know, all the other people that have died, you know. What was the name of his little girlfriend? You know, the
Sophie.
One that was in the Sophie. I mean, you know, so many things that have happened.
He's also the one that shot Shane, right?
Yeah.
So he's becoming flatter and flatter, right? In his affect, his emotions, you know, he's coping by not feeling, you know, he's coping by just reacting, you know, and taking charge, quote unquote, is, you know, finding control, looking for control, some way to control something in a world that is completely out of control. Mm. And he could well be a
governor.
A psychopath in the making, mm-hmm. Certainly a horrendous victim of trauma, you know. He would need a lifetime of treatment to get better.
All right. So, you know, kind of my hope is that he has ended his childhood, and if there's a redemptive arc for him before he dies, which, you know, I don't know I don't know how it turns out. I beg y'all to tell me, but you guys are very stingy with the future. The arc I could see him on if I was writing is him breaking down in his dad's lap and crying like a little boy and actually coming to grips with those emotions. And so, you know, he's one of those that I would worry about. He, in many ways, I think he's the no different than the governor,
mm-hmm.
who has removed all emotion and has turned to raw power and control as his way to cope. And so I think that Carl is turning to this, I'm a strong leader and I'm the protector, even though I'm just a child.
I mean, does that make him an actual sympathetic character? Like, you're describing him right now as a sympathetic character, someone that we can get behind, we're rooting for. But, like, I don't root for Carl. I root for someone to slap Carl, which is probably not the best thing to do from
a therapeutic.
Sometimes we just need to be slapped. That was said by Dr. do you actually see him, like, when you watching week to week, do you think the average viewer of this show can see that and resonate with him, or is he too much of a, almost like a cliche?
I think probably one reason why I'm hopeful for him is I have a 12-year-old. He's probably about that age, or 10. Or
and you've done this to your child?
And you know, my son just been shot with a deer rifle, and lost his dad, mom, you know. I guess I hope for that. Probably the way I would envision them writing that in is not that he'll break down and go to his dad, is that he will fall in love with the younger sister, who there seemed to be a little flirtation or interest going on. Mm. And maybe she can draw out the sense of humanity out of him.
Is that going to be kind of like Anakin and Padme or something like that? That sounds like like I said, once again, I'm not licensed, but that sounds like the kind of relationship that starts where she gets beat a lot.
It's not good.
It's a good thing he's 6 or 7 years younger. She can probably beat him up.
Oh, gosh.
So, yeah. See, I think that as Carl, he always wears the hat. So I think eventually he's going to turn around and he's going to be the new, I don't know, there's going to be some kind of, he represents what's best in Rick. I think that will come to to be, you know, as Rick has lost his
mind,
you know, well, mind, I was going to say, his like police uniform, you know, the remnant of his like former, you know, moral law abiding self is like his hat that, you know,
say Carl is justice.
No, well, I wouldn't say that. I would say, I just think that that is, could lead to, I think that he'll have a turnaround at some point, perhaps. And it, you know, I don't know. They haven't, I don't know.
You know, they're one of the most powerful scenes for me in the entire show was right after Carl shot Lori and he comes out in the courtyard and Rick gets, you know, gets the fact that Lori's dead and he completely ignores Carl.
Yeah.
You know, and completely folds and Carl is just left out there. You know, and you can really see the 12-year-old in that moment. Mm-hmm. You know, the one that needed his dad, you know, and his dad was not there. So he, in a way, you know, he's making up for that, I think, in all of the stuff that he's doing now. But, you know, that would be a redemption somehow, you know, that his dad, I would love to see that. I don't know if that's going to happen. Probably not. But, you know, that his dad would come back in such a powerful way back into his life to take that moment back. You know, the moment that he gave up, you know, when Lori died, when he wasn't there for him, that he somehow could be there for him again in a way just as powerful to kind of offset, you know, that moment.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Well, I'd say if they're going to strike, they probably need to strike while the iron's hot because we've actually noticed, I think, especially doing this show, that especially, I'm going to keep using the word especially, especially this year, there have been a lot of movies that dealt with father-son relationships and how they're resonating with the culture. I mean, like I said, that's almost like an entirely different conversation. But in Star Trek, you see Kirk having that father issue deal with. Man of Steel is right up front about father issues. We even see father figure types in movies like Pacific Rim. Older males kind of the tutelage of younger males, even in movies like Wolverine. And we're eventually going to get Thor, which is, you know, one big
daddy issue,
you know? So like this is, you know, this is time and time again, like something that's being dealt with. And I think resonating over and over and over with the populace. And we've already mentioned the male demographic, 18 to 49 in this culture, we probably all have daddy issues to some degree or another. But I guess moving away from the daddy issues. So I had, once again, I was doing some prep, and I wanted to write down just a few words about Lori. And I wrote, worst mother ever?
Question mark?
No.
Being a mom has nothing to do with knowing where your son is.
No, I mean, where I could have some empathy with Lori is she's the feminine side, which means she feels vulnerable in humanity at the edge. And so she turns to Shane. Rick's gone. He's dead. Who knows? And so she turns to him, and she turns to him probably because she wants her son to be protected as well. And Shane best represents a possible father substitute. So I don't think she's awful, but I mean, what happens though is rather than repentance and honesty, she just goes bonkers and wacko. And so it was kind of like,
it was
merciful terms that they took her out, you know, for us just going,
for us not having to watch.
Gosh, Lori, I mean, you didn't screw up. You didn't mess up by hooking up with Shane. But what you did once you found Rick, that was the big mess up. And so, yeah, she's pretty pathetic.
Alan doing the best he can to make her not sound as awful as we all feel.
I think it goes without saying that we all wanted Lori to die.
What does that say about us, though?
Well, yes, there is that. But I will say, the way in which she died was rather shocking. Mm-hmm. And
redemptive.
And yes, redemptive. For her. Yes, she did choose. She encouraged whoever it was to, take her out and in mm-hmm. place of, a baby representing, hope and so on and so forth.
The continuation of the virus.
Continuation of good things, yeah. But yes.
Well, okay, well, that brings me to something that deals with all the characters in general, and it's one of my gripes about the show, that once you capture the 18 to 49 demographic, and you don't just capture it, you blow it away. Mm-hmm. You have a quandary. You have a moneymaker. So you can't get rid of, really popular characters. And the last character I really want to hit on is Daryl, but I'll hit him in just a second. But this show has got to be making AMC so much money. Mm-hmm. So much money, in fact, they have an entire show that lasts an hour
to talk
after
about,
the show.
Yeah.
You know? So what I saw, especially in the third season, was almost forced redemption.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like especially in the first two seasons, we got some story arcs that took us to natural redemptive changes and or just complete downfalls of characters. Mm-hmm. But now I could tell every episode who was going to die.
Mm-hmm. Because T-Dog?
Because every episode, one, it wouldn't be a Superman character. Mm-hmm. It had to be a side character. And they wanted to make you care about every single character. Which is why, even though I love the fact that Merle redeemed himself, I felt like Merle's story was forced.
Yeah.
We were like, oh, crap, well, we hadn't killed nobody in, two episodes. Who can we kill? Well,
you got to make them better to kill them.
Yeah, we've got to make the audience care to kill them.
Yeah.
Because we'll kill townsfolk all day and no one will care. The little governor's henchmen we don't know, we don't care about, we don't even know their names.
Right.
Well, the average fan doesn't. I'm sure there are some hardcore Walking Dead that know every single character's name. So we got to make Merle likable before we can kill him. And it's that concept of forced redemption
mm-hmm.
Where I want to grab on and I want to say I really like the fact that character is redeemed to some. I'm really glad that I'm rooting for them. But then I knew that they were going to die. I mean, we hadn't heard from T-Dog in a while. And then all of a sudden T-Dog's playing a part and starting to help people out. I'm like, oh, T-Dog. You're gone.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the governor. I mean, obviously, this is heading full speed towards a conflict between Rick and the governor, and someone's going to die, someone's going to win, and someone's going to lose. Does the governor get redeemed in this scenario, or does he live fully into who we think he is?
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be interesting to see how they story arc him.
Which is maybe why he didn't die in the first place, because they didn't really go anywhere with him.
Right.
Or they didn't. He didn't expand at all.
And
he just became pure evil, basically.
Yeah, I think that the show is where I think its greatest weakness is what's going to keep me watching this in season 5, 6. So I've not watched Breaking Bad, but everyone keeps talking about it. And Breaking Bad's character, I'm assuming from picking up from people, is he just keeps getting worse and worse. And so you're kind of hanging on to that show, watching him disintegrate mm-hmm. into unhumanity, basically. Well, what's going to happen with this one? Why will someone want to watch The Walking Dead in season 6? I'm real excited for season 4.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait.
I know why.
You know what? But you won't tell
me. No,
so I'm just going to Wikipedia.
Oh, comic book guy.
I know why.
Yeah.
Well, saying that, the last character I do want to hit on is everyone's favorite character, basically. No one has more posters, stickers, internet memes about how he's going to save us all when the apocalypse comes, but Daryl.
Yeah.
The guy who's not even in the comic.
I thought you were going to say T-Dog.
No. Chris's favorite character, T-Dog. What is it about Daryl that everyone loves?
He's awesome.
Describe awesome.
He's dependable. He doesn't get involved in the drama. He removes himself and he's just, I'm not going to deal with that. I'm going to keep everybody safe. And do the stuff that needs to be done. He's a no-nonsense kind of guy. And you know what? I think Daryl would be my pick for who I would like to be. You know, he doesn't mess around. But at the same time, his not messing aroundness, his quality of that, is tempered with, you know, good qualities. Whereas, you know, you see with other characters, such as the governor, his not messing around quality is tempered with, I want everyone to die. You know, Daryl is kind of a team player.
And he's no longer a white supremacist, I guess?
Correct.
So he's already had his redemption? He had his moral redemption?
Yeah, he had his moral redemption. But, you know, like Harold mentioned earlier, under stress we regress. So I think Merle and Daryl were antithetical. And Daryl felt a little sibling loyalty, but he wanted to shed his past. So, which is why he would begin to fall back into this just codependent family pattern of submitting to Merle, who's probably just like Merle's father was, this real abusive, alcoholic, mean person. So you see that weakness in Daryl as well, but he really respects honor. He respects Rick. Mm-hmm. And if you remember, he even points out to Carol, Rick has honor. Rick is a man of honor. Mm-hmm. She was saying, I'm looking for a man of honor because her husband was a deadbeat. And mm-hmm. Daryl defends and says, Rick is a man of honor. So he's also just so cool. I mean, the guy carrying a crossbow, and he's just, you know, he's a survivalist. He could live in the wild. And
he read Max Brooks' Zombie Survival
Guide. Right.
Absolutely.
So he's a gun, he's a crossbow. So I think in the kind of southern, cool, you know, man's man personality is probably pretty winsome.
He's been transformed by love. Though it's subtle.
Whoa.
With Carol.
Hey, that's why you'll be watching in season six. They're slow playing it.
Oh, are they slow cooking that storyline?
Yeah, they are.
As long as you guys keep watching it with me, I'll stick with it.
Okay.
To me, Daryl's a, you know, the defender. And in a great sense of the word. I think he's really honest, you know. I don't think he hides who he is and what he's about. You know, when he doesn't understand something, he asks. You know, Alan's point was really interesting about Merle and the unhealthy relationship with the sibling, and you know, he does really, really well as long as they're apart. You know, which you know. Goes to show that sometimes you have to love people from the distance. And mm-hmm. I think this is, you know, this is a very well illustrated example of that. You know, what happens when you allow yourself to pull back in into a really unhealthy dynamic, you know, that takes you out of your community, which is what, you know, he chose mm-hmm. to do for a time there. I think he's developing. You know, he's getting tougher and he's getting more sensitive at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, in a way, you know, he's able to.
He's found something to fight for, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. He's you know, kind of falling in love. Maybe who knows? But there's a part of him. So you know, Sophie. You know, he was that. I was really impressed
relentless
with that.
To find
he was relentless to look for her. You know, and.
But do you think he was looking for her because he cared about Sophie or because he cared about Carol?
Does it really matter? You know? I mean, I think he cared about both. I would think he mm-hmm. did. I mean, you know, it was a little helpless little girl,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the woods full of zombies. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
And he, I mean, he tried to do whatever it took to get her mm-hmm. back. And he was really the only one, you know, mm-hmm. that was that invested.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess at the end
of I respect him.
Yeah.
No, and I think everyone does. And but that's the question I guess it raises about the characters we resonate with. Why, if Rick is always trying to do the good thing, Rick is the leader, he's the guy everyone looks to, why doesn't everyone want to be Rick? Why does everyone want to be Daryl? Well, he said, why are there posters and stickers on people's car of, like, Daryl will save us, you know, and things like that? Why?
Where's your sticker, Alan?
I don't do stickers. He's got a Michonne sticker. I'd put Michonne on my car. Or just her sword. So I guess probably what Daryl has the luxury of doing is not being the leader. Mm-hmm. And so all the criticism falls on the leader. The quarterback gets all the criticism. Mm-hmm. The coach gets all the criticism. The CEO, the pastor, whatever. So what makes us all not want to be Rick is Rick's the leader. And you get to see leadership is actually harder than it looks. And your character and your weaknesses are exploited or demoralized by leadership. So it's not an attractive position anyone finds themselves going, I'd like to be the leader of a, you know, 10-person group of people with lots of codependent problems running around trying to survive from zombies. So that's probably why Daryl is so attractive, because he can just be uber cool and efficient and loyal and all the good things without seeing his character really tested. But
he's the post-apocalyptic Fonz.
Exactly. He's very cool. But if you notice, he and Rick started to have tension over Merle being admitted into the community.
Right.
And, you know, had they not had to kill off Merle and redeem him in the story arc, he could have undone the community. So.
Well, I wish we had time to go down the list of every single character and really explore those, like, kind of worldviews and attractive things and unattractive things about each character. But for time's sake, I want to hit on one last thing,
okay,
which by no means, for those of you listening, is all that there is to talk about. But I don't want to keep everyone glued to their medium of listening for that long. I think there's an ultimate question that we have to ask, and Alan kind of hit on this earlier. It's not just a zombie genre that makes us ask this question. It's any kind of post-apocalyptic, from as bad as Waterworld to as awesome as Mad Max, you know, why keep going?
Mm-hmm.
What reason is there to keep going if you don't have hope? And I guess to springboard us into that, I'll ask each of you guys, do you think that you would keep going in a world full of zombies? And to be clear, to make sure that we understand the difference that Chris pointed out earlier, we are still talking about slow zombies.
Yes.
And fast zombies, we're all dead. It doesn't matter.
Yep. Yeah, that's true.
It's important to clarify.
It is very important to clarify.
It's one reason why I actually didn't like World War Z. Sorry, spoiler alert. Okay, so if you think about it, living things have this innate instinct to live. So even the zombies can be half cut to pieces and they're still crawling around trying to eat. So there's this part of having a living body that makes you want to survive. But one of the scenes that was really powerful for me was when they were at the CDC center in Atlanta. And the director, who was probably a very educated, smart person, had concluded the best option in life is to end it because there is no hope. And so for me, I think, you know, my theological framework would drive me to press on. If I didn't have a theological framework, I don't think I would be as motivated to keep going.
Well, wouldn't there be an antithesis of that, saying if you had a theological framework and you had some hope outside of the physical, wouldn't you just want to go ahead and just die and go wherever you're going to go?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would be afraid of death, probably, but I would want to keep going because having a theological framework would invite the question, why is this happening then? What's the purpose of this? You know, is there some grand scheme from God or higher power, whatever you would define, that way to cause this. So we've got to continue on. So I would probably process it that way. But I another facet of this thing that I love is the concept. What resonates with me is this show is extremely philosophical. So I don't watch it because its cinematography is great or its storyline is great. It's just the reality that when you're faced at your edge in an apocalyptic genre, you either have the choice of nihilism, taking your life, getting it over with, existentialism, you got lemons, make lemonade out of it. There's some, make purpose in your life, or there's got to be some theological reason to continue. And every character kind of runs through that grid. And that's what I like seeing, is the character pushing the envelope of, is it best to just end this and get out? Or can we make the most of a sad reality? Or is there really a higher power? Unfortunately, I don't think the director can really develop that third question because he's an atheist. So
he wouldn't even know how to describe, like, or have a... His closest thing is Herschel, maybe?
Yeah. Herschel's a man of faith, a good man. But he can't really develop that line of thinking, I think, because it would be counterintuitive to his own predetermined worldview, which is there is no God. There is no point to all this, which is probably why he's so good at this, because his conclusion of life is there's no point. This show, really, if you're being honest, there's no point to the show because it's not looking good. Yeah. So even if you die, you wake up as a zombie right after that. Yeah, what if you go to bed and the person sleeping beside you has a heart attack and dies? I mean, it's just...
They are the walking dead.
Yeah, they are. They really are the walking dead.
So. Mind blown.
Whoa. Yeah.
Well, Chris, since you spoke up...
I don't know if I can follow that.
Or are you surviving the zombie apocalypse?
I would hope so.
But not with your wife?
No, she's long gone. Long gone.
Spendable.
Too many attachments. Too much baggage.
We're going to post this on, like, the blog, and, like, she's going to have full access to it, right?
Ooh, yeah. You can edit that out.
Okay, so, but I want to explore this. Okay, so you think you would survive, but, okay, so why, and I know this is going to be a little bit of assumption, I'm very interested in, not to completely leave Alan's point, though we're going to have to leave a little bit, why is your wife not surviving?
Oh, well, okay, now, with full, all joking aside, obviously, I would hope in a Rick-ish manner, I would fight for my family. Absolutely.
And then why?
Why would I fight for my family? Mm-hmm. Well, clearly because I have emotional attachments and I love her and, you know, that's, you know, what comes first. And so I would hope that I would, you know, sacrifice myself if so needed. That's what the real, right now, pre-apocalyptic Chris says. Now, post-apocalyptic Chris might disagree with me.
It's a dog-eat-dog world.
It's a dog-eat-dog world. And you see that, you know, at least in the show, you know, the good guys are nowhere to be found because they're all being digested by zombies.
You know, taking advantage of?
Yeah, you know, so nice guys finish last kind of world. So, you know, post-apocalyptic Chris might say, you know, Jesse, kind of a mutual understanding of if things go down, you know, I love you, but
but I really don't love
but for the betterment of humankind, you know, your memory will live on. And I will tell the masses. I will tell the masses of your great deeds, and
I'll see you in the afterlife.
And you know what? You don't really want to have to go through all this anyway. So, yeah, wow. She's told me before that she'd probably just
take it out.
Yeah, pop. Mm. Yeah, she's gone.
That's so crazy because if I was a betting man, knowing the both of you, and I know the. You know, the greater audience has very little context for Chris's wife.
Yeah.
But knowing them both, I would have put money on Jesse.
Mm-hmm. Jesse what?
The Jesse survivor. The Jesse surviving.
Well, in her mind, she's like, she totally has the opinion of, you know, I know where I'm going. I don't need to go through all this garbage. I'm out of here. So, you know, in that situation, I wouldn't encourage her to do that by any means. But if I had less entanglements in that regard, I mean, you know, she's got a point, A. And B, you know, I can be, my chances improve, perhaps.
So what I'm hearing
from
is...
From a purely statistical point of view,
what I'm hearing is she's the spiritual leader of the relationship, and you're scared of death.
I'm not saying any of those things. Don't... You're leading me. Okay?
Objection.
Jesse, I love you. And I'll, yeah. We'll get through this together, hopefully.
All right, Harold.
I will definitely try to keep going. Ultimately, I don't feel like I have a choice in that matter. My beliefs, my spiritual beliefs mm-hmm. would inform me that as long as I have breath, there's a purpose for me being here. Whether there are three other people left, or whether there are 3,000 or 3 million people left, I would gladly welcome the day that, you know, God would call me, so mm-hmm. to speak. I would hope He would anyway. But I would hope I could operate in a, you know, in a sphere where I would try to continue seeing the good in something. You know, I would have to have some hope, you know, to move forward. And that might mean to really, really have to look for it
mm-hmm.
more so. But, you know, there's always hope. I mean, that's what, you know, that's what Christianity is about.
Mm-hmm.
Hope and faith, you know, believing beyond what my eyes are seeing. I would have to. That would be the only way to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like what you're saying, because I like to think that I would not only survive, but I would be the antithesis to everything we see on the show. I would be like the welcoming, but not like the governor, not with ulterior motives. And I think people are typically scared of that, because they say, what if? What if someone comes in and they take advantage of you, and they kill you, or they leave you with nothing and you die? Well, that's the beauty of having that view in the first place. As long as I have breath, I have purpose. Mm. And the worst that can happen to me is death, which in my particular worldview, and I think the worldview that we all share, is that death's not the end.
Right.
So the worst thing that can happen to you is that you help while you're here. And then, you know, someone double crosses you. Well,
the worst thing that can happen to you meaning you don't help, you don't love, you become less than human.
Yeah.
So
it's actually worse than dying.
Yeah.
You know, you're losing your humanity, losing what, you know, makes you losing love, basically.
So becoming a zombie isn't the worst thing. It's becoming less than human.
Becoming the walking dead is the worst thing.
Yeah. Mm. That's good.
That's right. That's why Chris is here.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, like I said, there's lots more we could hit on, but I want to, you know, try to keep this into a reasonable thing. And you guys, we actually started really late tonight, and I appreciate you guys staying up. No, it's not your fault, Harold. Trust me. But I wanted to get to what we always get to, which is our come on moments. We have three seasons of come on, so it might be characters, it might be general story arcs, it could be a specific event. And we're going to kind of double it up with also your favorite moment, so we can kind of get through it a little bit faster. And then I have something fun I want to do. At least I hope it's going to be. It's fun in my mind. So, Alan, what is your thing that just was, like, ridiculous to you? And then what was your favorite thing about this entire series?
Kind of the dumbest thing?
Yeah, like the dumbest, like, that doesn't make any sense or...
Hmm. I think the dumbest thing was Andrea's relationship with the governor. And so... You know, I really couldn't. She was an enigma as a character to me, because I couldn't really understand what was motivating her.
I mean, chalk something up to writing.
Yeah, so I don't think they did a good job with her character, by the way, because you couldn't get glimpses into her character of here's why I'm shacking up with the governor, because hopefully it'll help my community get, you know, it just, yeah. It never felt real. So that was probably the dumbest thing of the last season.
Well, any season.
Of all the seasons, okay. Really, yeah.
And then what was the favorite thing?
Oh, favorite thing. Gosh, it's hard to say a favorite thing, but...
Michonne can be your favorite.
I think Michonne, she's just gorgeous, you know, and she has a British accent, so the character playing Michonne.
Interesting.
So when you hear her talk, it's also uber cool, you know, women with British accents are very cool. So, yeah, favorite moment, I would have to say, even though I know I agree with you, it was probably Forrest was Merle.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about that's touching. Probably because I also have a brother that it's been a difficult relationship. So to see him redeemed in the sibling sense was very winsome to me.
Cool. Mr. Chris?
I would say my come on moment would be probably the end of season 3. I enjoyed season 3 immensely.
Are you talking about the no resolution?
Yeah. So, as you know, I don't know, I'm a comic book fan first.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm waiting for the epic clash of, you know, Governor and Rick, and it just never happens. And that really annoys me because in my mind, you know, I see how long can we string this thing out, you know, and they're just beating it to death and it's still just hanging on. And that's a struggle for me. So that's probably the fact that the governor is still alive and isn't dead. You know, that bothers me. You know, he's had his time. You can, you know, do that. And then he kills all of his people who all have guns.
Yeah.
30 of them. And nobody manages, you know, they're just so shocked and surprised. That whole thing.
Well, I can't believe he shot Ted. Wow. And Stacy.
Why didn't he shoot the guy right next to me? That's weird.
I should probably stand here.
Yeah. So that whole thing, the ending was... unfortunate, and at the same time, right, season 3, Andrea dies, right? That was the worst thing I've ever seen, you know, because they were, like, trying to make us, like, miss her, and we're like, no, please.
Yep.
That should have happened a long time ago.
That's how we knew she was going to die, because right, they were exactly, trying to make this
as you said. So I would say the anticlimactic, you know, climax, season 3. Quite unfortunate. My favorite thing, I love the characters and just, I love reading about them and, you know, this just gives me more time with them. It gives me a chance to, you know, bond with you fellas.
Mm.
Yeah.
And there's some ladies.
It encourages some really good conversations between my wife and I. Things like that, you know, it helps you remember. Helps you remember what's important in life. So those would be a couple of them.
Chris is on his own redemption arc right now.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm coming back his around. Words.
Well, my come on would be what does the governor have on people? You know, I mean, I guess
he's not charismatic.
How did he get to where he is, you know, and in the position that he has and the power. Who gave that to him, you know?
He's tall.
He's
tall.
It's his voice.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And now it's the iPad.
What was he, like a car salesman before? You know, I can't remember.
Was salesman.
Yeah. Which is, you know, neither here nor there, but, you know, what, there's nothing obvious about him, I guess, that would make anybody want to follow him. So why does everybody follow him?
Hmm.
Yeah. Where does his power come from? To me, that's
right.
That's ridiculous. And my favorite thing is being able to tell my non-church going friends that my pastor has a group that meets on Sunday nights. It's together to watch The Walking Dead.
It scandalized some people in the church.
It's a great conversation starter. And I don't know if I have a favorite moment. You know, I guess the storyline for Lori is kind of forced as well, but that episode was really powerful. Mm-hmm. Where she died, and just, you know, how she had an honest you know, outpouring of love, you know, for both of her kids at the very end before she lost her life. That was really powerful for me. Yeah. Right before, of course, the live C-section on TV. But that was probably one of my favorite moments because it was very meaningful, even though it was really tough.
Very intense. I just remember the feeling we walked that night. Remember? We were just like shocked. Like, yeah.
Silence.
I've never had that feeling. Yeah. I mean, you've been to a horror movie where you get scared, or another a romantic comedy or love story where you're sad because the character dies of cancer in the end or something like that. But that movie, just the emotion of you're so shocked.
Yeah.
You don't even know what. We didn't say anything. We were speechless after that episode.
It's because none of you guys watch Game of Thrones.
Right.
Which we'll get to another episode. We'll have the exact same. We'll talk about the Red Wedding. Oh, gosh. So I know that'll come up probably in April. So my just like get out of town moments. I mean, I feel like there's so many of them.
Yeah.
Because I want to know how like Lori crashes a car when there's nothing else on the road except for a zombie that they've been running over at, you know,
right.
Why?
Poor Dad.
How do people with like rocket launchers get run off by like two people with machine guns when assaulting like an entire prison? Yeah. I mean, like, there's just some things that, like, writing wise, I don't really think they thought it out, you know. And that's the problem. Most of my problems with it are very like I don't think they thought this out, and or we're hanging on to things longer than we should because it's become less about telling a story. Like I've been in preparation for this. I went back and watched most of season one, and I realized in season one they're telling a story.
Mm-hmm.
They're not concerned about who lives and who dies. They have a story to tell. And then in season two, they still kind of have a story to tell, but by, you know, towards the end of it, they're dragging it out. They're going for ratings. They're like making
Hyundai cars are everywhere.
We're seeing
Hyundai commercials.
Yeah. And by season three, like I said, they won't get rid of anyone cool.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh, we promised people, like tons of people. The body count's going to be like 25 people in the final episode. And I was like, oh, so you just, you know, you willed 25 of the governor's villagers out there.
Right.
So
they count.
Yeah. So, you know, it's some of that not telling a good story. And part of what this entire podcast is about is looking at really good story. And I think there's still potential there and it can still redeem itself.
Mm-hmm.
But those are usually the things that I kind of balk at. But my favorite, I think, moment, and there are some really good moments in this show, and I think, you know, the Lori birth whole episode just was very striking, but I think the thing that sticks with me, even though it took way too long to get to, was the moment they opened the barn and Sophie came walking out, because you saw a whole bunch of characters indiscriminately. Like, because it brings up a question that we didn't have time to talk about tonight. Like, what makes us human? Like, when do we lose our humanity? And that's one of the scariest things with being a zombie. Like, are you still in there somewhere? You know, what we talked about with Herschel. Like, hoping that there was something left in there. And they're just blowing away zombies. You know, it's almost like it's fun for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as Sophie walks out, you get to see, like, how that is affecting every single character. And then the character that it takes to do what needs to be done.
It was Rick.
And I thought, you know, like I said, it took, and we're searching for Sophie for entirely too long to get to that point. But once that point hit, I thought that was everything that it was built up to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was probably my favorite moment. So, you know, I want to thank you guys again for being here.
Thank you.
I want to make sure that Chris has the opportunity to go first, since his should be the shortest.
Right.
Chris, if people enjoyed hearing you talk about how much you love your wife and will not let her die during a zombie apocalypse,
of course,
how could they continue to follow you and engage you in that conversation?
Quite simply, you can't, sir. I challenge anyone to track me down on any social media for the simple fact that I don't exist.
Okay.
You're already off the grid, aren't you?
I'm preparing. I'm getting ready for it.
The zombies won't find you.
Yeah, I believe I have a Facebook page, and I've been told I have a Twitter account. But, again, you know, you probably know more about it than I do. So,
So meet Chris in person if you can find him. Yeah, if yeah, not, you might be out of luck.
Mikey can be my intermediary.
If you really want to find Chris, find me.
Go through him. Yep.
So, Harold, this was your first time on the show. I really do appreciate you being here. If people wanted to kind of pursue you in any way or get to know, like, see what you're up to, how would they do that?
Well, I have a small private practice in counseling, so they could look me up on the web.
Okay.
And that would be a good way to do it.
Is there, do you know, you said you have a website?
Yep, it's PetriniCounseling.com.
All right. Mm-hmm. And Alan?
RedeemerGSO.org is our church website. And so I think that's a good way to connect with me. But I would love to talk, I love to talk about these issues, existentialism, nihilism, all that sort of thing. So regardless of whether it's within a church context or not, because I think they are at our core human philosophies and issues. So if anyone wants to chat, they can find my email and Facebook and all that sort of thing.
All over at the website?
Yeah.
And you don't do Twitter yet, do you?
No, I'm behind. I'm constantly behind. You're constantly keeping up. So.
Well, you text, and that's what's important.
Text is my new...
Well, like I said, thanks again, gentlemen. If you want to interact with me or let me know movies that you'd love to hear us discuss, I guess we're TV shows for that matter, since we've just opened that door. Mm-hmm. We have Aragorn swung those double doors open on the TV conversations, even though that was a movie. Wow.
Yeah.
No, nope, it's not working. It's not working. Then feel free to follow me on Twitter, @physification. You can also find us at our blog, realworldtheology.com. Like us on Facebook and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And if you do find us on iTunes, review the show, bump our rankings, and let's get more people involved in the conversation. Again, I just want to thank my guests for being here, you, the listeners, for taking time to make us a part of the week. And until next episode, remember that story is powerful and entertainment is not biased.